The Nick Abbott Habit.
There was a tremendous amount of news about this week, and it was all anyone could talk about. Mostly, people were thanking God. Thank you, God, we were saying. Thank you that we don't ever have to hear the phrase coalition of chaos coming from Theresa May's mouth again. Now we're hearing it coming out of Jeremy Corbyn's mouth. He's still lost, but now Labour looks strong and stable. The Tories won and look as messy as Boris Johnson's carefully dishevelled hairdo, or in his case, hair don't. It's odd that, because in normal times, Corbyn wouldn't have stood a chance of getting this far. The big guns of the right-wing press have been pounding him since he took over as the leader of the Labour Party 2 years ago, and I always thought, why? Why would the press care so much about someone who they painted as hopelessly unelectable? Well, it might have something to do with Jezza saying that as Prime Minister he would look into the concentration of ownership of the papers in the hands of so few bazillionaires. When he said that, the bazillionaires had a major freak-out, spat their gentleman's relish all over their gentleman foot servants, and had a collective cow. They've been trying to drown him in a tsunami of furious ink ever since. What he actually said was, "We are developing a media policy which would be about breaking up single ownership of too many sources of information so that we have a multiplicity of sources." And to those single owners, it must have felt like he picked up Rupert Murdoch by the ankles and hit Viscount Rothermere with him. He said that in 2015, about 3 months after he became leader of the Labour Party. Before that, the Sun and the Mail and the Telegraph couldn't give a rat's bottom what the bearded weirdo from the Socialist Republic of Islington said about anything, because he was just some muesli muncher who didn't have a nun's chance in hell of being able to put any of his loony left policies into action. But when he got a sniff of power, the media titans had a Victorian fainting fit. And when they came round, they went into the sort of whirling rage that the Tasmanian devil used to go into on the Bugs Bunny cartoons. Like that. The newspaper barons must have thought, oh, this will be easy. We'll paint him as a total nutter who's a danger to the country. And it helped them tremendously that every day they could photograph Jezza trying to hack his way past that Day of the Triffids jungle that covered the front of his house. If he can't keep his shrubbery in order, how's he going to run a country? And so began the biggest sustained assault on any living thing outside Aleppo. If it was a boxing match, it would have been called off on humane grounds. I'm surprised the RSPCA didn't get involved. And despite the constant barrage of negative coverage, the right-wing press failed to turn the country against Uncle Jezza. In fact, just the opposite happened. It's almost as though we finally decided we don't like being told what to do by offshore billionaires who have only their own interests at heart. The headlines screamed from the front pages of the usual papers in the run-up to the election saying that Corbyn is not strong or stable. The Sun pictured him in a bin. A Corbyn. Get it? But the polls showed him doing better, so they ramped it up a bit. Jeremy Corbyn is a friend to the terrorists and he has a suspect device hidden in his beard. But the polls showed him doing better. And you could sense the papers rolling up their sleeves as though to say, right. Jeremy Corbyn eats babies and he wants yours as a snack he can eat between meals without ruining his appetite. But the polls showed him doing better. And it must have started to dawn on the press that it was the young people that were responsible for the country not doing what it was told. The Sun even ran a supposedly humorous article telling its ageing readers to prevent their kids from voting by whatever method they could, including but not limited to waking them up to distract them by giving them breakfast in bed at 9 in the evening. You know, because the young are feckless and lazy. Oh, how we didn't laugh. I think it was the surprise of the Brexit vote and the scary clown show that is the Trump presidency that awakened the young from their political slumber. To be honest, it's not surprising that they've been uninterested in politics for a long time, because politics has been deathly boring for a long time, right up to the EU referendum, that the young thought was going to go their way, that we were going to stay in, and didn't. That brought them up sharp, and we saw them crying on the news, sore upset. They were upset that their horizons had been limited by their parents and their grandparents who wanted to be surrounded by fewer foreigners. And so they got interested. Just like people of my age were interested in politics when Maggie Thatcher was in power. And to this day, every time I hear her name, I hear it being spat out like Alexei Sale is shouting at me, Margaret Thatcher! It's not a harsh name, Thatcher. It's quite soft when you break it down. It's just that's not how we saw her. Not soft or gentle at all. Of course, when I were a lad, having an interest in anti-Thatcher politics meant wearing a badge and having a day out for a march and a yell every now and again. These days it's all about quiet communication. Quiet save for the rattle of computer keyboards. And what the young really, really wanted was to give the Tories a boot up the body. And the Tories seem to be helping by publicly committing some sort of political suicide by deciding that what the country wanted to hear was the phrase strong and stable over and over again, twinned with the one about a coalition of chaos. And when I first heard it, I thought it was quite cute, clever almost. And the second time I heard it, I thought, well, cute will only get you so far. And the 50th time I heard it, I wanted to hurl my television set out of the window just to make it stop. Someone in Tory high command must have been looking at the orange ape in the White House and been figuring out how he did it and how they could jump on that bandwagon. Well, Trump did it by having a riveting personality, which even her closest friends would not accuse Mrs. May of having. And he did it by adopting a few easily chanted one-syllable, three-word slogans. Build the wall, lock her up, drain the swamp. He didn't mean any of it, but the yahoos from the dingling states lapped it up because they could fit those slogans on the front of a trucker's hat and could holler them at one of Trump's pantomime rallies. Now, try chanting, what we need is a strong and stable government under the leadership of Theresa May rather than a coalition of chaos under Jeremy Corbyn. It rolls off the tongue like a brick and lands at your feet with a thud. Actually, it fell from their mouths like a brick and landed right on their feet with an ouch. It was as though they couldn't hear that we were tired of it, and they just kept saying it. And you could see them hugging themselves when they said it. They were just so deliriously tickled with it. Strong and stable. Coalition of chaos. They acted as though it was the best use of English language since Shakespeare. And on top of the grating irritant that was that parroted catchphrase, the Tories were guilty of believing their own press. They thought that Corbyn was such a calamity that they could send out a lightly grilled pile of doggy do and it would beat them. So they didn't really try that hard. Unless that was them trying really hard, in which case we're all in big trouble. So one smug, well-fed MP after another took turns at saying it, delighting in repeating it again and again. Talk about a tin ear. Repetition didn't improve it. As a political slogan, Richard Nixon's was better. I am not a crook. And how long is it going to be before Donald Trump writes that on Twitter? And I think the Donald factor might have had something to do with the result as well. Cozying up to a lying, unstable, infantile, climate-change-denying, orange egomaniac didn't do Mrs. M any good at all. Most people in this country, away from the pull of Rupert Murdoch's Fox News in America, can see what a scary, uniquely unqualified buffoon Donald Trump is. Young people especially. And that appears to have been the key, the youth vote. The generation that's been derided as tear-stained snowflakes who are only interested in sending each other pictures of their personal areas and gawping into their phones all day, rose and spoke out in huge numbers. They actually went out to vote. And about bleeding time. And the right-wing press, knowing that the young are stubbornly resistant to their charms, were petrified that they would ignore the paper's instructions on who to vote for. Like I said, the Sun was so afraid of their participation and what it would do to the result that it printed a comical guide for its older readers on how to stop your kids from voting. And if that did anything, it will have shown those kids which newspaper to avoid buying, should they ever get the urge to look at the Dead Tree Press. And they probably won't, of course. The newspaper industry is in terminal decline. The traditional press is in danger of losing its power. Social media has taken its place among the young. And the Conservatives were relatively absent online in the run-up to the election. They ran ads, but they were personally unengaged, whereas Labour engaged quite heavily on Twitter and Facebook. Labour encouraged social media users to register to vote. The Conservatives did not, probably because they assumed that all their aged supporters would be registered already. And the older they are, the more likely they are to vote, and to vote Tory. So the Conservatives assumed that it was in the bag, that their supporters would drag themselves to the polling stations regardless of the weather, or whether they just had their knees chewed off by their dogs. And they assumed that the young wouldn't bother to vote in any great number. So they sat back and sparked up a cigar in celebration of their imminent landslide victory. And rather than going out and connecting, going on TV to debate and trying to get converts, they let their friendly papers do their canvassing for them, Big mistake. Huge. Over a quarter of a million under-25s registered to vote on the last possible day. The evidence suggests they did not vote Conservative. Times have changed. It's no longer the sun what will win it. And so the phrase coalition of chaos is now unexpectedly being applied to the Conservatives and the DUP, rather than to Jeremy Corbyn and whichever band of loons in loon pants he could ally himself with. And it's curious, because we heard time and again that Jeremy Corbyn is a friend to terrorists. What we didn't expect was that Theresa May would place herself in the position of being a friend to those that are friends to terrorists. But that's the desperate position she finds herself in. She must be kicking herself with a pair of her studded shoes, the ones with the steel pointy toe caps. If Theresa May was a teenager, she'd be referred to a shrink for self-harming, and her parents would take away her computer just to be on the safe side. So the day after the election, we woke to the news that the Tories would be in bed with the DUP, and as with one voice, the nation thought, what's a dup? Which is a good question. But a better one is, what do they believe in? Well, let me illustrate the position we are in with this true story. My brother is British. He has an Iranian wife, and they're wondering whose country they should move to. They could choose a country that is in the hands of a fanatical bunch of religious fundamentalist zealots who are backed by active terrorist hit squads, or they could move to Iran. In a nutshell, the DUP want a party like it's 599. They are religious. Very religious. This is par for the course for Northern Ireland, which has lagged behind the rest of the country in embracing the modern world for that very reason. Religion is also the superficial cause of the Troubles, as they are benignly referred to. So, what are they like? Well, like many of those of a religious bent, they define themselves more by what they don't like. The DUP does not like the gays, of course. This is the standard default position of religionists. My personal religious belief is that religionists don't like the gays because you can't get babies from two women or two men having at it. And what do babies make? Prizes. Converts to the cause. There won't be the patter of tiny feet swelling the ranks of the faithful if two men or two women get jiggy with it. It's the same thing with birth control. Religions need more babies to swell their ranks so that they can beat the rival gang who believe in something slightly different from them. And the DUP are not shy about expressing their hatred of the LGBTQUINs. I think that's a fully inclusive set of initials. I don't want to leave anyone out from the community. As though there's such a thing as a non-straight community, like they all get together in a village hall for tea and a bake sale once a fortnight. But whatever they do, the Democratic Unionist Party don't like it. The founder of the party was the shouty Ian Paisley, a reverend. He was the one that bellowed everything he said. He's so loud, Led Zeppelin asked him to keep it down a bit. Arr, 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 he used to yell. The crockery rattling on the shelves of people miles away in different countries. Arr, 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 he used to go. And he passed on his enlightened view of the world to his offspring. His son said that homosexuality was immoral, offensive and obnoxious. He called them repulsive, you know, because that's what Jesus would say. I think if Jesus ever came back, he quite probably would arrive with a list of people who didn't like. But it would be a list of bug-eyed, spittle-flecked shouters who had taken the supposed word of God and twisted it to further their own ends and prejudices. It'd be a list of people who spread hate about while claiming they know that's what God wants. That's my religious belief, and it's just as valid as yours. But that's all standard stuff for the religionist. What's more alarming is the party's attitude to science. They don't believe in it. Just like Donald Trump's done in his cabinet of chaos, the DUP appointed a climate change denier as environment minister. Sammy Wilson it was. He said it was a con to suggest that humans had changed weather patterns and that cows were more to blame. And if that's the cow's evil plan, it's a good job we eat so many of them. But it's worse than that. A significant number of senior members of the DUP believe in creationism. Somehow, in spite of David Attenborough, fossils, common sense and all the evidence to the contrary, they've convinced themselves that the Earth is just 4,000 years old. and that means that man used to run with dinosaurs. You know, like in Jurassic Park, but without Jeff Goldblum and all that great music. And like in Jurassic Park, if Mrs. M does hop into bed with the Duppists, at first it'll be ooh and ah, and then comes the running and the screaming. Some of their members actually want creationism to be taught to children in schools so that it might counter evolutionary teaching. Because, you know, evolution is just a theory that does not appear in the Bible, so it can't be true. Some of their beliefs seem to come from a different age, and now they'll be part of shaping our current one. And apart from getting preference for their flags and their marches and all that troubles stuff, mostly the DUP want to dictate what kind of Brexit we're going to have. Mrs. M's been saying that she wants a hard Brexit. She makes it sound like she's ordering from the menu an S&M party. This is despite her not wanting to leave the EU at all before the referendum happened, which seems pretty opportunistic to me. In fact, the election we've just suffered through was opportunistic on her part as well. She saw the chance to bury the Labour Party and get a mandate for her hard Brexit and insisted we go to the polls. How's that working out for you, Mrs. M? The DUP don't want a hard Brexit, though. At least they don't want a hard border between the island that sounds like the Southerners and the island that sounds like the Northerners. They don't want a border there at all, which is going to be difficult to achieve if Mrs. M goes into the negotiations flailing her arms round like a furious threshing machine. It's going to take finesse and diplomacy. A soft Brexit, in other words, a Brexit that will look pretty much exactly like what we have now, which will make us wonder why we went through all this in the first place, if things are just going to stay more or less the same. Meanwhile, the right-wing headbangers in the Tory party are doing their nut that she's even talking to the DUP and that she's pulling back from pulling out of the EU. And the Tory wing of the press are reeling at their loss of influence and are spitting like a cornered cat. And the head of the EU negotiating team is sat at an empty table and looking at his watch and wondering where the hell's the party from Britain. But they can't show up to start the process till they find out what they're going to have to give to the DUP for their support in not letting the government go down like a sinking ship. And if all that sounds like the basis of a strong and stable government rather than a coalition of chaos, I'm a brontosaurus. Hear my roar. Meow. That's it. You can read the tremendously amusing and enlightening columns, What I Write, in a handy book available on the Kindle site in planet-saving e-book form. The last one is also available in tree-killing paperback. That one's called, Well, the Whole World's Gone Crazy, which seems about right. And I'll be back on LBC Friday and Saturday nights at 10, and here, in your ears, for the next podcast, which will be out on the last day in June. Until then, I appreciate your attention.
A Big Things Media production.
Big Things!
Arr, arr, arr!